Ba 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 hip in the lip ba 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 hip in the lip from unknown parts of metropolitan New York City. I am the hip and this is the lip.
Yes, good evening, everybody. Hello on this lovely April evening. Nice warm April evening as it is.
Welcome to your New York Islanders podcast. We have a lot of exciting topics to discuss. It's been an eventful 4 days. Three Islander first round hockey games in 4 days. The three games decided by a total of 4 goals, and the Islanders emerge up 2-1 against the Florida Panthers, as we have game four coming up on Wednesday, the 20th. And again, the Islanders at Barclays Center. So it's you know, three games decided by 4 goals, obviously intense games from start to finish. And all right, I'm just excited. Yes, yes. I was just playoff hockey. We're right in the thick of it. Let's go. Let's go.
It's the playoffs. I mean, this is what we were waiting for since we started back in January. You know, again, we thought they should be there, and here they are, and we're right in the middle of it, right in the thick. Up 2-1, just like last year. Game three overtime victory, just like last year. I mean, it's the parallels to last year so far. I mean, they're very, very much noticeable. I mean, game one win, game two loss, just like last year, and then the game three overtime victory. So,
we don't want it to be too parallel. Okay. Well, so it's nice for you to relate to that series.
Hopefully, yes, that's you're right, and I'm not trying to say yes. Hopefully, the parallels end now in game four, because last year I thought if they would have won game four, that they would have went on to win that series in six. But of course, that did not happen. So let's hope that they can take it game four, and then knowing that they have game six in their back pocket if they're not able to get the job done in Sunrise on game number five. But
right, and of course the lip is referring to last year's first round playoff series loss against the Washington Capitals. And so let's just say the parallels should end right now. So let's get right into this, though. You know, since the last show, we had the Islander statistician Eric Hornick. He predicted the Isles in six. That is still very possible. He thought that the three games in 4 days favored the Islanders because they're a younger team than Florida, with Jágr and Luongo, etc. Well, I mean, the way it played out, look, the Islanders won game one, but then the next night, back-to-back, they actually lost game two. Game three was an overtime victory. So let's go into your, you know, initial impressions of maybe the first and second game. You know, what did you see?
The first game, I mean, the theme from the first two games, and you heard this everywhere. I mean, you heard it from the Islanders broadcast team. You heard this if you're watching, you know, national broadcasts and just hearing them, you know, break down, you know, or the NBC guys, you know, just breaking down the game, not showing the highlights of the game. But I mean, it was the Islanders played better in game two and lost, and you know, the Panthers played better in game one and lost. And you know, I guess I would agree with that. I mean, the numbers definitely say that the Panthers got the better of the play in the first game. The Corsi numbers, the advanced stats, after Mr. Hornick broke that down for us a little bit last episode. But I mean, the Panthers had the clear edge in the advanced statistics in game one. I think they out-attempted the Islanders by like close to like 30. I mean, the Islanders had a lot of trouble with the size, speed, and strength of the Florida Panthers, and that Bukestad, Riley Smith, Yossi Jokinen line has given the Islanders fits for the first couple of games. I mean, we got so much to digest here, as it's, you know, we've seen three games go by. But I mean, that first game, you know, it was back and forth. Panthers, you know, take the lead. Islanders come back. You know, the Islanders are able to take a lead late in the third period, make it 5-3. The Panthers are able to cut it to 5-4. Kind of a mad scramble to the end there. But I mean, yep. What as an Islander fan, what you were thrilled to see was your best player playing like the best player, and he was the best player on the ice, and he has been the best player in the series, with all apologies to Mr. Riley Smith, who was a second line player that's had a pretty nice career so far, short nice career, but he's absolutely tortured the Islanders these first couple of games. But John Tavares was definitely the best player on the ice the first couple of games. That trio, I mean, like I said, I thought that Jack would keep that trio together, John, Kyle, and Franz, and that trio has been absolutely brilliant, creating chances, dominating possession in the offensive zone, and really, Tavares with 3 points in the first game, Oposo with a couple points, Franz with a goal off of a sick Tavares setup on the power play in that first game. And then Tavares made a great play, taking the puck away from, I think it was Campbell, again, still in the first game. He took the puck away from Campbell. I think it was the fourth goal. Was able to get it to Oposo, who snapped it past Roberto Luongo. And one of the things I'll also throw out there was, almost all the goals so far in this series that the Islanders have scored has been on the blocker side. And it was something I mentioned in the last game, that this was one of the things that they had talked about. Luongo, he's I guess more of a traditional butterfly goalie. He'll take away the bottom part of the ice. It's tough to score, five hole or towards the bottom part of the ice. You're usually looking to shoot high on him, but he has a really good glove hand. So if he's shooting high, well, you better be shooting towards the blocker side. And that blocker side has been very kind to the Islanders so far. But I thought the Alan Quine line was terrific, has been terrific so far. But the other theme, of course, the first couple of games has been how bad the Brock Nelson, Josh Bailey, Nikolai Kuhlman trio has been. And the hip can attest to this, and we'll get into, of course, game three. But my head almost exploded when Josh Bailey was inserted into the lineup again yesterday. We'll get to that. But that line was miserable the first couple of games. I mean, just miserable. Played as bad as you can play. I think they were collectively like a minus 10 or 11, whatever it was. Bailey was minus 4. Nelson was minus 4. Kuhlman had to be at least minus 2. I'd have to go back and take a look at Kuhlman. But, I mean, Bailey has just been wretched since Jack's, call out of Josh Bailey a couple weeks ago. He's only regressed. He's only gotten worse since then. I think he's a minus 8 with, no points. I think he was a plus 1, I guess, yesterday. It's the plus minus has been indicative of how bad they have been. I mean, just missed assignments in a defensive zone. No forecheck, just absolutely dreadful. But that first game back and forth, Grice I thought was excellent, made 40 plus saves. He let up 4 goals, but I mean, he really kept them in the game, made some terrific saves. In close, I thought the Islanders have to do a better job of their clearing the front of the net, which they still have not done a good job of in the series, and this goes through yesterday's game as well. Those are my initial impressions of the first game. Mr. Hip, any comments on anything?
Well, Greister, as we created that nickname, I think I see Greister more on social media, but we started with Greister. And, I think game one, look, he let up 4 goals, but I still think after that game, I felt like he would be competent enough for this team, for this playoff series and potentially beyond. Like, he made, he was just assaulted in game one.
Absolutely. And
look, he let up goals, but they weren't like, the goal that, what's his name? Mason on the Flyers let up in game two against the.
The little tip in from this from center ice that.
Anyway,
every goal is worse than where that is.
Greister has held his own. There's no question. And
he played well.
Would Halak be better? Maybe, but I don't think he could be much better than the way Greister has played to this point. So. I don't feel worried that there's going to be these terrible soft goals. Although I feel like he does let up his fair share of long rebounds on shots.
Rebounds, he does. And you've seen Florida capitalize a couple of times.
Yeah, any decent team at this stage, good teams are going to capitalize on that, right? I mean, so that is one concern I worry about when you see the longer shots from the opposing team on him. But look, we've talked about John Tavares a lot. since we started this podcast, you know, when we started, he was statistically, at least, you know, with the goals and the points, kind of lagging from his, you know, the expectation that he had set for us.
He had a down year. He absolutely had a down year. I agree.
And look, you know, and it, you know, sometimes points seem obvious, but you got to make them anyway. And we talked about, what does this team need to do to start playing better or more consistent? And you said, look, John Tavares needs to play like we know he's capable of. And, you know, the last few weeks of the season and now right into the playoffs, he's been on absolute fire. He was the player of the week the week before, the last week of the season, regular season. And now, you know, we had 3 points in game one. You already mentioned, and I think he already has 6 points in the series, points in all 3 games. So let's give credit where it's due. It's obvious, fine, but you know what? He's playing at the level this team needs him to play to be in these games and be competitive in the series. And now you're up 2-1 with game 4 at home. So it's potentially coming together.
Yeah, well, I mean, and like I said, I mean, you need Tavares to be the best player, and I mean, he has been the best player in this series, hands down, and, you know, that's the biggest thing. I mean, you can look at Florida's second line, how good they've been playing. Their first line's played well also. I mean, and you could just see, like, how dominant they can be when they possess the puck, and it's just they're big, they're physical. I mean, Yager's a zillion years old, but, I mean, he still is one of the best at being able to, you know, control the puck and, guard off, you know, any potential defenders, and, you know, control the puck. And, you know, actually, we'll get to this, Jack decided to go strength against or power against power by putting Tavares out there against that first line in the first couple games, but more so yesterday, having the last change. But the bottom line is that John Tavares has been the best player on the ice in this series. And that right there, I mean, is what could potentially be the difference. You know, that, again, that trio has been terrific with Franz and Kyle. I criticize all three of those players at certain points over the course of the second half of the season. I criticize Franz Nielsen for his play last year in the postseason. I thought he was terrible. And I thought that game one, Franz Nielsen played his best playoff game as an Islander by a mile. I mean, that's how good he was in the first game. And again, that unit, I mean, they were dominating possession of the puck in the offensive zone. And bottom line is, if you're going to play out there against that Florida top line or against that second line, I mean, if you're controlling the puck in the offensive zone, that means they're not, doing the same against you. So, I mean, John Tavares has been the best player in this series thus far, no question.
You know, so lineup points that I think are worthy of mentioning here. I think they've used the same lineup in all 3 games, as far as I know. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, no changes. Okay. We saw Pulock, who has not come out after, and Pulock struggled in game one. I'll give Jack credit for not, because Pulock was definitely struggling in game one. A few turnovers, you know, looked a little iffy out there, looked a little hesitant at times, but has played much better the last couple of games. And credit to Jack for not panicking. Oh, I got to get Sedlecki or Straight in there. Oh, I got to come out of there.
Right.
Well done, Jack, for not taking him out.
So right. So that was the other thing I wanted to mention. We have not seen Marek Zidlicky or Brian Strait in any of the games. And how many times have we talked about how, you know, especially Strait, just a subpar player, got a lot of, I mean, he played probably, you know, 3/4 of the Islander games this year and down the stretch, and, you know, push comes to shove when it's time for playoffs, Jack, you know, clearly he recognizes of Strait's, deficiencies as with inability, and is not putting him out there. Now, why he continued to use him in the regular season, maybe to baby along the younger players or whatever, but that's a topic for a different day. Now, we have not seen Brian Strait. We have not seen Marek Zidlicky. And Mr. A guy that we have not talked about at all, Alan Quine, is that how you say his name?
Yep, that's it.
He's replacing Anders Lee. Yes.
I mean, he took a spot in the lineup. I mean,
right.
Obviously, so, very different players.
So, but, I don't know if you've had any impressions of him so far. I mean, what did he play?
All positive.
Games?
Yeah.
Two games? 3 games. But, no, I mean, before, the regular season, he, like, played just the last few games, I think.
I think so, yeah. I think his first game was against Buffalo. You know, they were sitting players. You know, they were.
Right, so Buffalo was the second to last game of the regular season for the Islanders.
Yeah.
That was his first game.
NHL,
and now he's playing every playoff game.
Yeah, and that fifth goal in game one, I mean, Kwan made a beautiful move, and it's really reinvigorated Ryan Strome playing with him and Prince. But you saw Kwan make a beautiful move in the first game. It led to that fifth goal. He made a little deke. He was able to get a good shot off, put it off the right pad on his offside of Luongo. That created a big rebound, which Strome jumped on and put it past the sprawling Roberto Luongo. That was the game-winning goal, as it turns out, after the Panthers made it 5-4. Quine has been tremendous. I mean, he's not, a guy that's going to, over the course of an 80-game season, be a 70-80-point guy. But what he is showing that he is a guy that can play in this league because he is a smart player. He plays hard every shift. He skates very well. It seems like his hands are decent enough. He's able to create a little bit. He gets in hard on the forecheck, and that's what you want guys like that to do. Guys that maybe don't have the skill set of a Tavares or a Poso, you want them to get in hard on the forecheck, and especially in playoff hockey, that's what those guys, those type of players have to do. And this is for any team, not just, the Islanders. And Quine and Prince have done that, again, using their speed, using their aggressiveness on the forecheck. Strome is, definitely, benefited by playing with them. It lets him, kind of go into the, open areas of the ice when they're very aggressive, on the forecheck along the wall. A smallish line, but, I mean, really have been terrific, that trio. And Alan Quine, again, called up from Bridgeport because they were decimated by injury. And, he has earned himself a spot on the postseason team. So go figure. You'll see this every now and again. It's kind of surreal just seeing a guy like Quine that was in the minors the entire season, and now all of a sudden is a key cog in their lineup in the playoffs. So
Anders Lee goes down, and I know that you were very concerned about that. I think you tweeted it. As soon as there was a concern for injury, and he stepped up. Mr. Alan Quine stepped up, so let's just hope he can maintain that level.
Yeah, Quine's not going to replace what Lee did. I mean, Lee was really established himself as such a net front presence on the power play. They've kind of tinkered with their power play a little bit. They had Nelson out there with the first unit, with the other, the other typicals. Ryan Strome, actually, I guess, I don't know if he's permanently displaced them on the first unit, but Ryan Strome got some shifts, got some minutes with the first unit yesterday in game three. Quine, again, doesn't play at least Lee's game, but the game he plays is really conducive to playoff hockey and very much the antithesis of Josh Bailey.
Are there any other points that you want to get to for the games in Sunrise, Florida, before we get into last night's game at Barclays?
I thought the Islanders in game two definitely played better.
Game two, the Islanders lost 3-1. They were losing 2-0 late third. The Tavares scores, and then Florida got an empty netter. Butchie was talking about how, Florida just looks super tired, especially towards, the latter 10 minutes of the third period. And they were just hanging on, and they did. But, yes, I came out of – it's just a weird sport sometimes. You come out of a game thinking your team played better, and they probably did, and they still lost. But, it evened itself out, at least in this small sample size, through games one and two, where the Islanders probably – didn't play better than the Panthers in game one and won that game. So in any event, I think that's a fair initial, take on games one and two. And we could move right on to last night's electric atmosphere at Barclays Center. I mean, I certainly felt that we were there in person, watched the game together, and it was just a thriller. I mean, look, the fans were into it. It's not going to be Nassau Coliseum. I don't know if you could even try to compare the two. I mean, you can't help yourself but want to compare the two. But it's not Nassau Coliseum. But let's give the fans credit; they were all really into the game. It was just full of energy. Even when the Islanders went down early, it appeared that they were going to have a 3-goal deficit. Certainly some emotional swings, which ultimately ended in Islander fans' favors with like 12 minutes into the overtime with with Hickey coming up with the big goal. And so, you know, now it's 24 hours later and we're still kind of enjoying
enjoying the filmy effects and but also enjoying the moment, because it's pretty cool to see an overtime goal in the playoffs. I mean, I mentioned I hadn't seen an overtime goal since Ray Ferraro. I mean, the Islanders, I think this was actually only their second overtime goal at home since Ray Ferraro in 93. As Tavares, of course, is an overtime winner in Game 3 last year. But it was funny, like leading up to this Game 3, I mean, it seemed like every paper that actually covers, you know, actually you know, obviously Newsday has the, you know, their Islanders have their beat guy with Newsday. The New York Post actually sent somebody to cover the team in Sunrise. I don't think the Daily News did, but, you know, whatever. But I think all three papers had articles on could the Barclays, you know, replicate what the atmosphere at the Coliseum, you know, in their first ever playoff game at the Barclays Center. And everybody was so interested in that theme, you know, oh, is it going to – could the Islander fans, you know, turn Barclays into a, you know, a real advantage for the Islanders like they had at the Nassau Coliseum, yada, yada. But I agree. I mean, the atmosphere was terrific yesterday. I mean, just like the scene outside leading in, you know, we saddled up at a nice little establishment a couple blocks away from the Barclays beforehand, which I really enjoyed. Luckily for the Lip, he didn't have to get a hot dog and wait for 10 minutes at the Barclays and not have his mustard and sauerkraut. So luckily he was able to get a nice bratwurst at this place beforehand.
KBH.
Okay, KBH. So yeah, really, really cool place. You know, cool beer hall, not overly crowded, enthusiastic crowd. Islander fans that were getting ready for the game. But yeah, you know, just a really overall positive experience. Obviously, the result, of course, you couldn't ask for a better result. And obviously, the way the game unfolded. And the way, you know, just like the way the game unfolded, like you said, a lot of twists and turns. You think it's 3-0, all of a sudden it's 2-1, and
you know, the Islanders won in overtime. There's going to be no commentary about how Barclays was was a crappy atmosphere, obviously, after the fact. If they had lost, then maybe you'd be hearing some stuff about that, but that didn't happen, and the Islanders won, and everybody was excited, and it was a great game. And so, man, they could go up 3-1 with a victory in a couple days. So, I mean, as far as the game goes, now, look, the obvious turning point, I mean, to me was, and I think everybody, you know, paid attention to this game, was thinking about it or wanted to talk about it, was this the offsides challenge, right? I mean, first of all,
it was a common theme for the NHL for this weekend. We'll get to that too.
All right. Well, admittedly, I didn't know that you could challenge an offsides call. So, what I guess I want you to explain is, like, what do the rules say regarding, like, how challenging a play that affects something that happens afterward? You know, so like. Let's say that, you know, the Panthers went in and out of the their offensive zone like three times, and then they scored, and then the Islanders want to challenge the first time that they went in the offensive zone, even though the play was continuous. You know what I mean? Like, how far back can you force a review on something that affects or takes away a goal that happened after it? Do you understand the question? Like, it's a weird. You're not challenging the goal itself.
Right,
you're challenging something that happened prior to the goal that negated the goal. So how far back can they review something that happened before before the goal itself?
Well, I think if the puck would have came out of the zone at some point, they wouldn't have been able to, and like they come back in and then they score, there would have been nothing to challenge. But since the goal resulted directly from their illegal zone entry, that's why and this was something that was
instituted. So is that what that's what the rules say? If the goal directly results from you know, an illegal action, then it's reviewable.
Yeah, I mean, and there's two things that you can review. This was something, of course, that was instituted this year by the NHL. You know, the coach's challenge of the offsides or of goal interference. So the offsides, this was actually done in Chicago on, we'll get to that a little bit later, but as again, it was a common theme this weekend, but it was something that was done in St. Louis in the Chicago-St. Louis game on Friday. St. Louis was going to take a 2-1 lead. on a goal by Vladimir Tarasenko. The Chicago coach challenges the play, you know, challenges that it was an offside. It was offside just by a hair. Same thing in here. And, you know, we, and of course, sitting in the stands, you know, you don't realize initially what's going on. And then you realize that, you know, they announce, oh, coach is challenged by the Islanders. And you knew it could only have been offsides. There was no goalie interference there. So it was clearly that he was challenging the offsides. And I guess the Islander assistant coach, I think his name is Matt Bartani. I think it's his name. Apparently he was credited with telling Jack Capuano to challenge the play, you know, challenge that it was offsides. And, you know, you saw a zillion replays on TV. I came back and watched it later, and I saw a zillion, you know, camera angles and vantage points and breaking it down frame by frame. And Butchie initially was like, oh, that looks like it's going to be a good goal. Oh, wait a minute, from that camera angle, looks like he was offside. It looks like the guy that got it right. It looks like he was offside on the play. You know, as he didn't have, as Jonathan Huberto, I think, was the puck carrier, or he didn't have control of the puck as he kind of went into the zone without control. And if you don't have control of the puck as you enter the zone, if you enter the zone before the puck does, you know, if your body is across the line before the puck crosses, then that's an offside play. That's exactly what happened. They overturn, you know, the goal. No goal, place erupts, so you think they would have scored a goal, you know, and we're thinking it's 3-0. Everybody's, you know, it's just like a gloomy atmosphere now at this point, very moribund atmosphere at the place, and you're thinking like a 3-0, could this team possibly come back? They just looked like they were dead at that point. It was off of a bad turnover by Hickey, actually. He couldn't control a pass by Pulak. Back they come, and Aaron Ekblad takes a nice feed, I think it was from Barkov, to the score, but oh wait, no goal. Re-energized, the Islanders score on a power play, you know, a minute and a half later, whenever it was, on a 5-on-3, and now the place is charged up again. And yeah, I mean, obviously a huge play in the game, but well done by Jack and his staff for noticing it and for, you know.
Do you only get one challenge?
Well, you lose a timeout if you don't get the challenge right, so then that's it.
And if you get the challenge right, can you challenge again?
I think so.
Because you don't lose the timeout. What if you use the timeout before you challenge? You can't challenge.
Then you can't challenge. Yeah, if you don't have the timeout, then you can't challenge.
Timeout. Got it.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Little lesson there. So, and how about Ryan Pulak? Now we're mentioning him again. He scored the first goal for the Islanders. Big shot on that power play, like you said, to get the, you know, you felt the momentum shift just, you know, slightly because you took the goal off the board for the Panthers, but you still like, all right, we got to score some goals here. And when they followed through with that first one, you're like, all right, now it's 2-1. It could have been 3-0 Panthers. Now it's just 2-1 Panthers. And you're really feeling like you're really into this game, and you know, the Islanders are getting good chances. And but then Florida scored.
Yeah, it was actually right after. So, yeah, I mean, Pulak with the howitzer. Yep. You know, just that just blasted past Luongo. No chance for Luongo on that to stop it. I mean, you see just like how he has a cannon for a shot. I mean, oh my God. Yeah, so his first NHL playoff NHL goal. So, again, kudos to Jack and for not removing Pulak from the lineup. And I want to destroy Bailey, so I'll make sure that we get that in there at some point, because I'm sure you remember my head almost exploded when I saw that it was confirmed that Josh Bailey was going to be in the lineup. But, you know, again, I was very happy with the decision to keep Pulak in there, as he also set up the second goal we'll get to in a second. But Florida scores the third goal off right after that power play ends. They score the 5-on-3, then the 5-on-4 ends, and then Florida comes right down the ice and are able to I think it was a Hickey turnover. And Riley Smith, again, you know, on the rush, sets it up, you know, a beautiful play to get a good shot on goal, saved by Grice, big rebound, and I think it was Bukestad that jumped on it and, you know, buried it past Grice. Now it's 3-1, and you're like, oh, you know, they have all the momentum, the place is alive, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's like it deflates again, the building after that goal. But, I mean, you know, the team, I mean, they had a couple of good shifts right after that. And then Pulak made a great play on the, and I thought this was a huge goal in the game. I mean, that second goal to make it 3-2 by Mr. Prince was an absolutely, you know, huge goal in the game. Pulak made a really nice play, you know, rushes down the right side, sees Prince cutting down the slot, and the slot has been very much open for the Islander players. So if they take note of this, Florida has been leaving that high slot open, and, you know, in comes Prince after a great shift by that line. Again, the Alan Quine, Prince, Strome line, a terrific shift. constant pressure, cycling the puck, you know, they have the puck in there for at least a minute, and then Pulak makes the great pass to the cutting Prince and is able to, again, go blocker side on Luongo for the 3-2 goal, and, again, a huge goal, and now, again, the momentum on the Islanders' side. Again, one of the turning points in the game as well. All right.
Yes. No, dude, take us to the finish line here. Just do it. I'm enjoying your. I'm feeling the momentum go up and down just listening to this beautiful commentary. So just take us to the end.
Well, I mean, after that second goal, you know, they get a power play. Martin with the clip. You don't see clipping penalties that often, but Kulikov, I believe it was, tried to lay a hip check on Martin, but. You know, it wasn't a clean hip check. I mean, he basically took him out at the knees, which is always a dangerous play. Islander fans have nightmares of Michael Pekka getting taken out in a similar fashion by Darcy Tucker, who was public enemy number one for a while at the Nassau Coliseum way back in the day. But, yeah, just a dangerous play. But, you know, Martin luckily was okay. They get the power play. Franz Nielsen scores off of a nice feed from Tavares, you know, lays a backhand pass to Luongo. And, you know, the place erupts. I mean, that was, you know, that the place absolutely went berserk after that tying goal. And, yeah, really just, you know, you think the Islanders are dead, when it's 3-0, or you think it's 3-0, and then all of a sudden, you know, just the tables turn and probably demoralized Florida having that goal wiped out. And, yep. But, yeah, you know, the third period was a lot tighter checking, not too many chances. I mean, it was very much a whirlwind second period, but third period much tighter. Islanders didn't really have too many chances. I mean, Florida, you can argue, got the better of the play in the third period. And then, obviously, we get to overtime and the nervous energy in the building. And, you know, it's as awesome as playoff hockey is, and at least playoff overtime hockey. I mean, that nervous energy in the building, and you're just, like, on the edge of your seat, and, like, every single time you kind of like take a breath. You hold your breath when the opposing team, comes into, your team's zone. Yeah. And then you kind of exhale as your team, you just relieve when your team clears, even if they're on the rush, have a good chance. You're still, you're not feeling like that, that tension like you do when the opposing team comes in and they start cycling the puck and you're like, oh, come on. Like, where's this guy? Watch the guy cutting. Watch this guy. You're basically directing traffic out there as a fan, and that's exactly what I felt I was doing yesterday, just kind of in my head, like, oh, watch him, Boychuk, what he did, like, DeHaan, go this way, and it's just absolutely one of the most intense feelings that any sports fan can have, is just watching, especially watching a live, playoff overtime hockey. And it was, again, more tight checking. Again, Islanders had some chances early on, but Florida really had the better of the play towards the, the second part of that first 10 minutes of overtime, and they had the little break to clean up the ice. And then shortly after that, the Nelson, the much maligned, as Butchie said, the much maligned Nelson, Bailey, and Kuhlman line, a good shift, keep the puck in deep. Kuhlman makes a nice play, wins a board battle, takes the puck back to the point, and, wrists it right at Luongo. Actually, really nice play, because if he would have shot it right away, which some players tend to do, it may have deflected off of a shin of, the Florida defender. Maybe Florida's coming back the other way. So good play there by Kuhlman, waiting for the shooting lane. He finds the shooting lane. He wrists it towards the net. They actually, it was a really good save by Luongo. There's a rebound there. They push it wide. And then Nelson and Bailey behind the net combine, and this is why support in the offensive zone is so important. Nelson's engaged one-on-one. Here comes Bailey, actually makes a nice play. Again, I'm going to destroy him in a moment. But Bailey actually makes a nice little play. Any positives for Josh, we'll give him credit for. And it was funny on the message boards afterwards. It was silver lining. He made a nice play on that overtime goal, right? But, yeah, nice, he chips it to Nelson. Nelson then sees Thomas Hickey again cutting down the slot, a la Shane Prince in the second period for the 3-2 goal. Takes a perfect feed from Nelson, wrists it again, blocker side on Luongo, game over, good night, the light, place erupts, everybody's jubilant, everybody's elated, everybody's yelling and screaming and jumping up and down, as was the lip, despite my subdued celebrations in the past. This time, the lip, I can tell you, was very much excited. And
it's not like Nassau Coliseum where there's a big parking lot of cars and people are honking "Let's go Islanders." But there were enough cars out there, and they were honking "Let's go Islanders," and it was great.
Yeah,
to
I mean,
hear
it
that.
it was just the pandemonium as you're leaving the building, and which I I remember so vividly from '93. Again, that was the last time I saw an overtime goal, and I remember how crazy people like jumping on top of the. I remember as a 9-year-old, I probably was a little frightened, like, "Oh my God." But yeah, I mean, just like, you know, the exit out and congregating in that area right in front of the Barclays, and everybody's yelling and cheering and screaming. And apparently some of the local residents were not too thrilled with the noise that the Islander fans were making. But that was written in a little blog today I saw. But yeah, I mean, you know, pandemonium, just absolute elation on the Islander contingent. And everybody went home happy after seeing a really fun, exciting, and obviously the right outcome for the home team.
And I'll squeeze in a hipster moment of Zenith for you, because it did occur at this game. So it was between the second and third periods, and we were making our way back to our seats from the bathroom, and you like abruptly turn because you saw someone, and you just like yell, "Islander Mania!" And like as you turn, like with your flailing arms, you knock over a beer of somebody that was walking by. Like,
wait,
they were holding a canned beer. Yeah. And he knocked it over onto the floor. And the guy who had the beer, he was like wearing a goalie mask. You could just see like him shake his head. But I think he was with an employee, or there was an employee there who said, "All right, let's go get you another one," or something. So
okay, you know, good. At least you got another beer there.
Otherwise, he would have taken that goalie mask and like headbutted you in the face. and I'm thinking, what is he talking about? Islander Mania? And yes, he recognized someone from the Islander Mania message board, the Lipted, as he was walking by. Now, look, I guess people on message boards have pictures of themselves. Usually you put an avatar or something else. But
I'll explain this one.
Before you do, the hipster moment Zenith, there's two elements to it. One is the fact that you recognize someone from a message board and are shameless enough to acknowledge it outwardly. And then secondly, as you're in and
Islander fans have no shame.
In your excitement of recognizing this person, the way that you turn, you knock you know a beer out of somebody's hand. So
whoops.
there you go. All right, so now defend yourself.
Oh, there's no defense. I mean, like I said, we have no shame, Islander fans. Come on. I mean, you know, we're...
Or not defend yourself, but explain. You said you... Well, yeah. So, how you recognize...
Yeah, well, it's because I recognize them from the Coliseum. They actually used... This group of guys used to congregate around, I think it was Gate 11. They were known as, like, the Gate 11 crew. So you'd always see them there almost every home game. I mean, you would intermissions before or after the game. You would just see them huddled up, like a group of, like, four or five guys just standing right outside the doors to Gate 11. So I saw one of them, and immediately, Islander Mania! But I also recognized somebody else, or somebody heard me yell Islander Mania at our pregame spot at KBH before the game. And I guess, like, he heard me say Islander Mania, and he, like, immediately his ears perked up and said, "Wait, who said Islander Mania?" And it was a name that I knew. It was NYI1058. Maybe he's listening right now. And, yeah, I said, "Wait, you're the guy that always says, 'I have a bad feeling about this one,'" taking a quote from Han Solo. Yeah, so that was an excitable moment for the Lip before, I guess it was also after the Islanders had tied the game. So the Lip was very excited.
Excitable moments for the Lip is, I'll just leave it at that. Okay. That's excitable for you. And I'm glad you were excited, and that's what this is all about. Right. So, all right, well, we're going to, I'm going to make this some smooth transition where I'm just going to say, all right, you've mentioned like three separate times how you want to get to Josh Bailey. I think listeners may be sick of hearing it. Maybe not, because they're in agreement, but you want to pile on, you have more reason to. So
it's gotten to a point now. And again, I gave him credit for his little chipping the puck to Nelson in overtime. And I want to, again, also on that goal, give Hickey credit, because I think Hickey, because I was making a line change there and their bench, you know, you have the long change from your own zone, but you have a short change when you have the puck in the opposing zone. So good. I think Hickey actually recognized that that he was going to have support on the back end, that he was not vacating that spot, because obviously it's dangerous for a defenseman, you know, to pinch up like that if the spot's vacated and you don't have a forward covering for you. But he knew that there was a forward jumping onto the ice that was going to have that area of the ice that to cover that allowed him to cut down the middle. So good job by Hickey. Bailey. Now, I'm going to mention Islander Mania again. Now, almost every topic, there's always differing viewpoints. Garth Snow, Capuano, certain players. this approach, this approach, this philosophy. You always have two schools of thought, different approaches. Josh Bailey, there have been ardent group of supporters for Mr. Bailey, that he is a very good, serviceable second, third line player because he has he's defensively responsible and his Corsi numbers and this and that. It's very rare that a subject on Islander Mania reaches unanimity. A unanimous consensus. And everybody agreed after the first, and everybody was already trashing him anyway because of his play at the end of the season. But after that second game, there wasn't one person in that thread that was defending Josh Bailey. There was no more apologist. There were no more, devil's advocate, other side of the coin, no more of that. Everybody was in agreement that this guy has to be banished to Siberia, put him on a jet, put him on a rocket and fly him into space, get him away from that team because he is poisonous right now to that team. There is absolutely no excuse or justification for Josh Bailey to continue to remain in the lineup. Now, Nelson and Kuhlman were not good in the first two games either. Although I will say Kuhlman, he's limited because he's playing with two guys that have been completely inept in their own zone. And there's only so much Kuhlman can do because I think Kuhlman has still been, okay in his own zone. Usually his board play is pretty good. I mean, his game is designed for playoff hockey. And I think if he had other line mates, he'd be, it would be more accentuated. But he's linked right now to those, to Bailey and Nelson. And Nelson, look, Nelson's not good defensively. He's really struggled defensively. He missed assignments. He's also deserves a lot of criticism, but at least he can bring you some positives offensively. Bailey brings you nothing. He is absolutely a black hole out there. He gives you nothing positive. He is a defensive liability now, which he usually was not that, not so much in the past. He flails his stick, when he misses a guy, he doesn't pick up a guy, he just flails his stick at him. You saw that multiple times on multiple goals. He's been on the ice for, how many Florida goals so far? Did he play a little bit better yesterday? I guess. But you know what? There is no excuse or justification that this guy remains in the lineup. I was livid when I saw that there were no lineup changes, and I am convinced now that it's not Jack Capuano's call when it comes to Bailey, because this cannot be lost on Capuano. Capuano's already called him out. So there is no way that this is lost on him. I think that Gart Snow is telling Jack, you cannot take him out of the lineup. And then you want to say that who do they have? What's the better option? Is Steve Bernier such a better option? You know what? Bernier is a better option because he has playoff experience. He plays a North-South game. He'll give you a good, hard, honest effort. You can put him on that fourth line. Move Clutterbuck up with Nelson and Kuhlman. I think that would be a good line. I think you have, those two solid, wingers in Kuhlman and Clutterbuck that can skate, that can get in the forecheck, maybe give some space, more time and space to Nelson. But Bailey, I don't know what else to say. There is no devil's advocate. There is no, let me just defend him because he's done this. There is none. I'm sorry.
I mean, you don't think it's too potentially too – I understand, what Bailey doesn't bring based on what you're saying, but
– nothing.
It's not too disruptive to – look, you could do a swap, Bailey, Bernier for Bailey. I'm sure, changes on the second and third line – in game four of the first round of the playoffs is not unprecedented. I'm sure it's not, right? But is moving Clutterbuck up to, Kuhlman's line and putting Bernier with Kazikas and Martin,
the fourth line has not been great. I mean, the fourth line, that's one thing I haven't mentioned.
I understand.
They have not had a great series so far. I mean,
right,
they were neutralized in the first couple of games, and even yesterday they were better. But they had a really good shift.
I don't know. You're like so used to seeing them together. They played together like the whole season, and now in the fourth game of the playoffs, you're going to ask Cal Clutterbuck to play with two guys that he hasn't played with at all.
You can move Bernier to the second line. I mean, I would say if you're going to. Depending on how you're divvying up the minutes, right now, Tavares' line, they're playing a ton of minutes. And, I think it's been somewhat equal with the other ones. I mean, I thought the second line played too much in game two. I mean, I was amazed. I think they played just average between the three players, 16, 15, 16, 17, something, whatever it was. But you can move Bernier to that second line, and I think you'd be okay there. I would think that if Jack were to make a move, he would put Bernier in the fourth line. Maybe that's what goes through Jack's head. Well, if I put in Bernier, where am I going to put him? It really disrupts my lines. Who knows what's going through their heads? I really don't know.
That's the voice that he has in his head too. Yes.
Well, I should give that a Boston accent. What do I do with my lines? They battle. I need more battle from Bailey. I can't do a good Boston accent. Wicked, wicked, wicked hot. There you go.
All right.
Next. Doesn't matter what he would do in terms of the line combinations. Right now, Josh Bailey, his confidence is shattered. He's lost out there. He is a complete black hole right now. And it's just a hard decision has to sometimes be made. And you have to say, hey, look, Josh, you're not getting the job done. We know you've been here for a while. You've been part of this core, but sorry.
He hasn't been benched. He wasn't benched the entire season.
I think maybe one or two games earlier in the season, yeah. But you know what? If the Rangers can bench Dan Girardi, who has been a warrior for them, who has played, I think, every playoff game since he joined the team 8-9 years ago, whenever it was. I mean, they said he's been battling injuries, Girardi, but he was absolutely dreadful in game one. And, Alain Vigneault said, you know what? I cannot have this guy hurting my team. He's not 100% healthy. He can play, but he is not helping this team right now. I have no choice. I have to scratch him. And honestly, I don't know how it could be a harder decision to scratch Josh Bailey than Dan Girardi. And again, there's no excuse.
You don't expect it to happen, though, do you?
If he didn't bench him for game three, I just don't think so. It's like it's an insult to Islander fans. It's a slap in the face to Islander fans because everybody knows how bad he's been. And like I said, there's no justification. Nobody's going to put their feet to the fire because the media, they're not going to ask, how come Bailey's in the lineup? Think about if this was a baseball player, a Yankee or a Met player that was like 0 for his last 25 in the playoffs. I mean, wouldn't that manager be grilled, from 17 different angles on why this player doesn't get
moved down or benched? When Alex Rodriguez was dropped to eighth in the in the lineup against the Detroit Tigers, because he was so horrible in the playoffs. This was 3-4 years ago, maybe.
I think it was 2006 against the Tigers.
Oh, yeah. 3 or 4 years ago. Make it 10. Make it a good 10. and I just remember, it was an elimination game, I'm pretty sure. And was it Girardi or Torrey? I guess
that was Torrey.
It was still Torrey. And A-Rod was dropped to eighth. And think about A-Rod 10 years ago when he's 31 years old or whatever. It's still in the middle of his prime. And so coaches do this when players are just not stepping. Look, he still played. It wasn't like he was benched. But Josh Bailey is not at the caliber of Alex Rodriguez. Alex Rodriguez, you never know. He could bust out of a slump and hit two or three home runs. But Josh Bailey is not score. We were joking before the game about how hilarious would it be if Josh Bailey scored two goals. And then we were trying to remember the last time he did score a goal.
Two in the last 2 months now. Two in the last 2 months. That's how many goals he has.
So, and he's playing his fair share of minutes. He's playing every game. So, anyway, all right. Well, look.
It's an insult to us. It's a slap in the face.
All that being said, let's look at the bright side.
The Islanders are up
2-1 in the series. Bigger picture. You're entitled to be critical in any way, shape, or form. That's why we're here. Okay. But bigger picture, step back. 2-1, game 4 at Barclays in, two nights from now, or people listening probably tomorrow, it'll be just a day away. And then we have game 5 at BB&T Center on Friday. Right. So now going forward, it's every other day starting on Wednesday. Because now we have the 2 days off, Monday and Tuesday, and then Wednesday every other day until the series is over. Game 6, if necessary, we could still say that, would be back at Barclays. And I'm just going to mention now that make the listeners aware, we may have a midweek announcement that's related to that game. We're planning to go to the game, but let's just say there may be a pregame event involving Hip in the Lip for that game. So we're still in discussions and working it out, and obviously there's only a few days to go until then, so we have to figure it out shortly. But if so, there will be announcement. I'll actually do like a podcast, but just like a minute or two long to share the details. And so keep so there I think otherwise, you know, the next show will be around then, either before or after that Sunday game. So, but just keep the podcast iTunes app, or, you know, if you actually listen through the website or whatever means that you do. But, you know, we do want more, you know, I think it'd be great if we could get a few more Twitter followers. You know, you don't like to ask for help in this, but, you know, the Lip is new to Twitter, but I'm trying to get him to contribute as much, and I think he's doing great. And so, you know, engage us through social media,
please.
And let's go Islanders. So we got
comment, you know, on my Twitters. Tell me how my Twitters are.
All right. Even if they're crappy, it's fine. Just something. All right.
The Twitters.
So, you know, some great hockey. There's more. You know, there's at least two more games. My guess is it's going to go at least six. I mean, it'd be great if the Islanders closed it out two more games, but I think Florida's too good to just fall over and have the Islanders win two more and be done. But crazier things have happened, so we'll see how it goes, and we'll be back in some way, shape, or form. All right. Let's go Islanders. All right. All right. Next.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye. Bye.